taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And I'm glad you could join me today. You know, today I'm reminded of the work of a magician. You know how a good magician, especially sleight of hand, you know how that works? The magician gets you to focus on one hand, on one thing, while they do the tricks in the other, out of sight. Well, that kind of reminds me of what I'm looking at today. We have our focus is being drawn to presidents and governors and legislatures, and the trick that's being done behind our back is, well, it's the courts. The courts have effectively taken over this country. We effectively are no longer a republic because, let's face it, you can pass a law, you can get it through the legislature, you can get it signed into law, but if it's at all controversial, it's almost immediately suspended by a court until it is reviewed by the court and given the blessing by the courts. And only when the courts say it's okay is it truly a law. It rather reminds me of the fact that in the Declaration of Independence, while most of us were taught that we declared independence because of taxation without representation, which is in there, it's in the Declaration, yep, it's number 17 out of 27, but we forget the very first reason listed, the very first grievance listed, was that the king has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. And that's what I see today. Only it's not the king that's doing it, it's the courts. Literally to the point when a court even refuses to suspend a law, to issue an injunction against holding up the enforcement of a law until the court has refused it. The simple fact of not holding up that law is now treated as if it's anarchy, it's overturning precedent, it's oh my God, it's... And when a court simply says, this is our opinion, it gets treated as if it's constitutional law. So let's start today with an article I wrote going into deeper detail. I've talked about before, but going into deeper detail about the not only the law, but the court reaction to Texas Senate Bill 8. The recent Texas law, SB 8, has been described as an attack on the right to abortion. The case challenging the law, Whole Women's Health versus Austin Reeve Jackson, has been a light ring rod for abortion activists. Referring to the law as both extreme and blatant violation of the constitutional rights, President Biden has been one of the chief spokesmen opposing this law and the decision by the Supreme Court. Now, by going to the original documents, we can cut through the hype and understand the truth, not only about the law, but the court's opinion as well. So we'll start with the Texas law itself, and it's at the heart of the current debate. Now, there are three interesting provisions in this law. First, Section 171.204, prohibited abortion of unborn child with detectable fetal heartbeat. Except as provided by Section 171.205, a physician may not knowingly perform or induce an abortion on a pregnant woman if the physician detected a fetal heartbeat for the unborn child as required by Section 171.203, or failed to perform a test to detect the fetal heartbeat. The law prohibits abortion of an unborn child once a heartbeat is detected. Now, Section 171.203 requires that standard medical practices be used to detect if a heartbeat is present. Now, if one is found, then abortion is generally prohibited. There is, however, an exception. Section 171.205, exception for medical emergency records. Section 171.203 and 171.204 do not apply if a physician believes a medical emergency exists that prevents compliance with this subchapter. So if a physician believes there is a medical emergency which prevents them from complying with the law, well, that's considered an exception, meaning if while treating a medical emergency, a doctor induces an abortion, they do not violate this law. But the third section is the one that I find most constitutionally interesting. Section 171.208, civil liability for violating or aiding or abetting violation. A person other than an officer or employee of a state or local government entity in this state may bring a civil action against any person who, one, performs or induces an abortion in violation of the subchapter, two, knowingly engages in conduct that aids or abets the performance or inducement of an abortion, including paying for or reimbursing the cost of an abortion through insurance or otherwise, if the abortion is performed or induced in violation of this subchapter, regardless of whether the person knew or should have known that the abortion would be performed or induced in violation of this subchapter, or three, intends to engage in conduct described in subsections one or two. So what's so interesting about this section of the law? Well, rather than making abortion a criminal offense, it makes it a civil one. In other words, rather than being sent to jail for performing an illegal abortion, a person pays damages. Also of interest, the person suing someone for performing illegal abortions cannot be a member of a state or local government. This means that anyone other than a government official can sue someone for performing an abortion in violation of this law. I believe the reason is for this to comply with the Supreme Court's opinion in Roe v. Wade, which states, a state criminal abortion statute of the current Texas type that accepts from criminality only a life-saving procedure on behalf of the mother without regard to pregnancy stage or without recognition of the other interests involved is violative of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. When the Supreme Court opined in Roe, they found that a law making it a crime to perform an abortion except to save the life of the mother violated the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. In effect, the court said that such a limitation on abortion deprived the mother and/or the doctor of the liberty to perform abortions without due process of law. Of course, the court did not appear to consider the question of depriving the child in the womb of their life without due process of law, but that's the problem with Roe v. Wade precedent. The opinion goes on to say, for the stage prior to approximately the end of the first trimester, the abortion decision and its effectuation must be left to the medical judgment of the pregnant woman's attending physician. For the stage subsequent to approximately the end of the first trimester, the state, in promoting its interest in the health of the mother, may, if it chooses, regulate the abortion procedure in ways that are reasonably related to maternal health. See, the court created this trimester scheme to determine when and how a state had an interest in regulating abortions. For the first trimester, the court believes the abortion decision is solely a medical one. After the first trimester, the court claimed that the states only had an interest in promoting the health of the mother. So when is it about the child in the womb? From the opinion. For the stage subsequent to viability, the state, in promoting its interest in the potentiality of human life, may, if it chooses, regulate and even proscribe abortion, except where it is necessary in appropriate medical judgment for the preservation of the life or health of the mother. See, the Roe court used viability of the child to determine when the state had an interest in protecting, as the court put it, potentiality of human life. And this is where I think the court really messed up. Now understand, in 1972, when this case was argued and decided, medical imaging technology was not nearly as sophisticated as today. Meaning medical science in 1972 did not allow the level of detail we currently have when viewing inside the womb. Neither did it provide the information regarding the gestational development we have today. Still, the Declaration of Independence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. We were not created when we emerged from the womb, we were created in the womb. So the question of when the state has an interest in protecting life should not be based on viability, the ability to survive outside the womb, but on the detection of life, which is what the Texas bill does. By basing protection of the life based on life being detected, Texas fulfills its duty to protect the rights of everyone within its borders. Since the Roe opinion specifically states that a criminal abortion statute based solely on the life of the mother violated the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, I believe the Texas legislature created a civil statute to avoid this legal hurdle. I also think they have opened up a couple of serious problems with their legislation, though. The first potential problem I see is the scope of who can sue for committing illegal abortions. As I noted previously, the law allows any person other than an officer or employee of a state or local government entity in this state may bring a civil action. This law places the burden of prosecution solely in the hands of the people of Texas. In other words, the state of Texas expects the people to bring the suit when the law is violated, rather than the state itself. Now, this isn't necessarily a problem, except for the second potential problem. The law states anyone other than a state or local government official can sue under this law. No other limitations are noted. So does that mean that I, as a citizen of Tennessee, can sue a doctor in Texas for performing and even intending to perform an abortion on a child without checking for a heartbeat? Does it matter whether or not I have a direct grievance against the doctor, other than the fact that the abortion of a living child is murder? See, I'm not a lawyer, but I believe it's standard practice for a court to consider a plaintiff's standing before proceeding with a civil case. Maybe the Texas legislature expects the courts to weed out the activist cases from those where someone is directly harmed. Unfortunately, that unleashes a potential nightmare of people and organizations filing suits against abortion providers in an attempt to sue them out of business. I don't find that just when gun control activists do it, and neither do I find it just when pro-life activists do it. That's why I think there's one part of the law that needs to be fixed, to define what grievance can be used to justify a lawsuit under this statute. Much has been said about how the courts have reacted to this lawsuit and why people should prevent the Texas law from going into effect. Sadly, very little of that talk has been based on the truth and facts of the case. What the Supreme Court was asked to do was to provide an injunction preventing the law from taking effect until the case had been decided by the courts. Now, this in itself is an extremely dangerous request, since it effectively places the judiciary above the other branches of government, which is why Justice Alito noted in his opinion, to prevail in an application for a stay or an injunction, an applicant must carry the burden of making a strong showing that is likely to succeed on the merits, that it will be irreparably injured absent a stay, that the balance of equities favor it, and that a stay is consistent with the public interest. Now, Justice Alito went on to note that what the applicants are asking for is both novel and complex. For example, federal courts enjoy the power of enjoining individuals tasked with enforcing laws, not the laws themselves, according to California v. Texas. And it is unclear whether the named defendants in this lawsuit can or will seek to enforce the Texas law against the applicants in a manner that might permit our intervention. See, precedent allows the court to enjoin people, not the law. Now, since a defendant's name can seek to enforce the law because the law prohibits state or local government officials from filing suit, how can the court enjoin them? Oddly, the power of precedent that the applicants are using to file this suit is the very same one that is preventing the courts from issuing the injunction. It seems that we will all have to wait until the actual case is heard before we know whether the courts will find this Texas law appropriate or not. If there's one constant in politics today, it's that politicians lie. So no one should be surprised when the pro-abortion politicians came rushing to the bulwarks to defend their understanding of Roe v. Wade and the constitutional right to abortion. Now, President Biden said in a statement, "Today, Texas law SB 8 went into effect. This extreme Texas law blatantly violates the constitutional right established under Roe v. Wade and upheld as precedent for nearly a half century." Funny how a law whose language appears to be specifically tailored not to violate Roe v. Wade is supposedly a blatant violation of that opinion. Even worse, though, is a constitutional lie President Biden is promoting. The Supreme Court of the United States cannot establish a constitutional right. That's not a power delegated to the United States, and since it's not prohibited to the states, only the states can establish a constitutionally protected right. In fact, what the court found was that before someone can be deprived of liberty to perform or receive an abortion, there must be due process. Furthermore, the Supreme Court does not have the legal authority to effectively create law by edict or opinion. The findings in the Roe v. Wade case legally impact only Roe and Wade. It is our judiciary's slavish devotion to precedent that gives power to the Roe decision, not the law or the Constitution. And President Biden went on to say, And outrageously, it deputizes private citizens to bring lawsuits against anyone they believe has helped another person get an abortion, which might even include family members, healthcare workers, front desk staff at a healthcare clinic, or strangers with no connection to the individual. Now, to be fair, President Biden is correct in the potential scope of these lawsuits. As I've already noted, the fact that anyone other than government officials can sue anyone involved in the abortion that violates the statute, it can easily spiral into a nightmare of frivolous lawsuits. However, Joe Biden is far from the only person rising to combat this Texas law. He and Nancy Pelosi have promised to take up the Women's Health Care Protection Act of 2021 when the House returns from recess. Now, what is the purpose of this bill? Well, from the bill we read, it's to permit healthcare providers to provide abortion services without limitations or requirements that single out the provision of abortion services for restrictions that are more burdensome than those restrictions imposed on medically comparable procedures, do not significantly advance reproductive health or the safety of abortion services, and make abortion services more difficult to access. See, lost to the view of the pro-abortionist is the fact that abortion involves the health of two people, not just one. This bill and others like it focus on the health care of the woman while ignoring the health of the child in the womb. The bill promotes the unlimited access to abortion while ignoring the consequences of that access. They want no more regulation on abortion than a medically comparable procedure, yet ignore the fact that those procedures are prohibited from taking human life unless absolutely necessary. History has shown us that the pro-abortion activists are not interested in being regulated along with medically comparable procedures. They want as little regulation as possible, and it seems many among these activists are ready to do almost anything to get their way. For example, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, "Republicans promised to overturn Roe v. Wade, and they have. Democrats can either abolish the filibuster and expand the court, or do nothing as millions of people's bodies, rights, and lives are sacrificed for the far-right minority rule." Now, while many Republican politicians have promised to overturn Roe, we all know how much we can trust a politician to keep their promises. Let's face it, what the Republicans claim is not so much that they will overturn Roe, but overturn what the Roe opinion has morphed into, an unrestricted right to abortion not supported by law. After decades of getting much of their agenda through the courts rather than through the legislature, is it any wonder the more progressive of the Democratic Party are willing to overturn the Senate rules, the filibuster, and to take over the courts to get their way? Does anyone else find it ironic that a party who's named after a democratic process uses such undemocratic methods to advance their agenda? See, there's a lot to unpack here, both in the legislation and the reaction to it. When does the government's duty to protect life begin? Is it when life is detected, when life is external, i.e. out of the womb? Or is it at some other arbitrary point? How should a state respond to an almost 50-year-old opinion that is not supported by the facts or science? And how should the American people treat the hyperbole on both sides of the argument? So as I've said so many times, this is why it's so important to go back to the original documents before we make up our minds on a subject. As for the law itself, I can easily see the justification for the heartbeat of the child being the delineation for when life must be protected. However, I do have concerns over the scope of who can sue. As for the Roe opinion, I wish more people would recognize it for what it is, a flawed opinion based on outdated science that considers only one side of the issue. Roe v. Wade is not law. To my knowledge, Congress has never passed a law legalizing abortion across the country. Then again, such a law would be unconstitutional, since not only has the Constitution not delegated such authority to the United States, the very idea of unlimited abortions violates the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment. Now, while I don't expect it from what passes for our judicial class today, I would hope a rational and reasonable look at the law would guide the courts. I fully expect the advocates on both sides will use the Texas law and the court's decision to demagogue, vilify, and yes, fundraise, at least for the foreseeable future. I only hope that this article and this video has helped cut through some of the noise and the misdirection to help you find the truth. So here we have another excellent example of how our republic has been turned into an oligarchy. We still call ourselves a republic, some even call us a democracy, but let's face it, you have a court that suddenly made up law. They determined, for their own purposes, that for the first 3 months, the first trimester of a pregnancy, the question of the viability, the life of the child in the womb, was strictly a medical one. No legislation, no due process, simply a pronouncement. We've come to call them rulings because we treat them as if they're rules, as if they're laws. We have them going on saying, well, after the first trimester, it's a question of the mother's health. And then the after viability, well, then maybe, but you have to protect the mother's life. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand protecting the mother's life, and I believe in protecting the mother's life. But you have a court suddenly deciding that abortion is a one-sided problem, completely ignoring the question of the child. And because the courts so slavishly follow the opinions, the precedent of other courts, well, now you have people believing that the court suddenly made up a constitutional right to an abortion when it did no such thing. Not only did the court not actually say that, the court has no legal authority to do that. But because we don't understand the Constitution, we don't understand the legal structures that it created, we don't understand the governments that we have formed to protect our rights, we're duped. We're tricked into believing that everything comes down to the court. And if the court doesn't suspend a law until they've opined on it, well, suddenly it's overturning precedent. It's a violation of a constitutional right that never was a constitutional right, and a violation of precedent. We no longer even think like free citizens in a republic. We think like subjects of the courts. And we treat the legislative and executive branches as servants of the court. And there are plenty of more examples. We see situations where the Supreme Court reverses a circuit court and orders it to hear a landlord's rights case. Why? Is it because the law is there? No, because the question all comes down to, you know, the San Francisco has an ordinance, and the courts don't like it, or the Ninth Circuit Court likes it, but maybe the Supreme Court isn't so sure. We have the Supreme Court throwing out California's disclosure rule. Now, I find, again, these are articles, these are headlines. Now, let's forget let's not ignore the fact that some of these laws are violations of the Constitution, but have we become so dependent on courts that we must sit and wait for the court to opine before we believe it's true? Now we have the court trying to decide whether to consider the emotional distress damages for a disabled patient. You have a patient, you have a patient who was denied, a deaf patient who was denied someone to sign for them. And they sued. The question is, okay, can they get damages for their emotional distress? And this isn't being done by the legislature. This is being done by the court. They are making law in the courts. And the American people seem okay with that. In fact, they seem more than happy about that. But every time we turn to the courts to solve every little problem in life, we become less and less a republic, less and less a free people, and more subjects to oligarchs in black robes. And there are plenty more, and I'm going to go through some of them in the second half of the show. Sure, we're probably aware of the biggies, right? You've got Bostock, you've got others, but what about the smaller ones? The small ways that we've turned over our self-government to a group of oligarchs in black robes, high priests in some cases, telling us what is and what it will be, what will be allowed and what won't be allowed. But before I take my break, I want to send you to healthycell.com/outloud. Check out Healthy Cell's new take on vitamins. They're made to be absorbed by your bodies properly and to really feed your bodies at a cellular level. Now, there are different formulas depending on what it is you need. You know, sometimes you get to the end of the day and you're just, you know, fuzzy and lost. Maybe you reach for an energy drink, or maybe you're one of those energy shots, or just a good old stiff cup of coffee. But you know, all that caffeine and sugar isn't really good for you. So try the Focus and Recall from HealthyCell.com. Regain your focus without all the side effects of, well, lots of caffeine and sugar. And as an America Out Loud listener, you go to HealthyCell.com/outloud, you get 20% off your first order. So give Focus and Recall a try, or try any of their products. Just go to HealthyCell.com/outloud for that 20% off your first order.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cell's pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today we're talking about oligarchs in black robes. We're talking about the fact that the American people have, well, we've pretty much turned over our freedom, our liberty, our power of self-government to judges. To the point now where, you know, an administration may put an order in place or establish a regulation, or even a law may be actually go through the legislative process. Believe that. Go through that process, but then it waits for a judge to rule whether or not that law will actually take effect, or that regulation will be allowed to pass. Now, people look at this as if it's the everyday manner of things, but really what it is done is turned judges into our rulers. So that's what happens when we start treating a judge's opinion as if it's ruling, as if it's a law. So you have a Biden administration loan forgiveness program. Now, you may agree with it or disagree with it, but it isn't dealt with at the state level where the power actually is supposed to exist. No. We wait for a judge to issue an injunction to prevent that from happening. But you see, the problem is now you don't know what the answer is going to be. How can you tell what the law is when the law is really up to the opinion of a judge, and that those judges very often are opining without any consideration of the law or the supreme law? So one judge issues an injunction, another judge doesn't. One judge sides with the Biden administration and blocks Texas's order to keep the federal government from releasing illegal migrants into the state without supervision, without testing. You have another judge that then stops the move of the Biden administration. preventing them from reinstating an amnesty program. Well, the Supreme Court comes around and intervenes and says, wait a second. No, you can't. I don't care that a judge says you can't. You have to reinstate the return to Mexico, remain in Mexico policy. The Supreme Court says, no, you can't force that. See, rule of law is dying because we're not being ruled by laws. We're being ruled by men and women and pretending they don't have political agendas. You have different courts with different opinions, and you know, your laws don't matter anymore. Even jurisdictions don't matter anymore. So, for example, you know, an appellate court overturns a red flag verdict. Now, again, it's not a question of whether or not red flag laws are good. I think red flag laws are terrible. I've yet to see a red flag law that doesn't infringe on a person's rights, that doesn't deprive them of due process. But are we wholly now dependent on judges whether or not these laws will be allowed to take effect? New York State institutes an eviction moratorium. But no, it's the federal courts that say, nope, we're going to lift part of that. We're going to order you to lift that. You have a Texas judge that looks at the Biden administration and says, nope, you know what? Migrant protection protocols, yeah, no, we're not going to let you change those. See, no one seems to notice that in all of these cases, the people have given up their authority to be ruled by judges. It's no longer a question of the laws that we pass. It's whether or not a judge will allow it to go into place. So we have the Obama administration that put together a transgender mandate requiring different schools and organizations to treat gender preference as sex. And in one case, we get a judge that says, yep, that's wrong. You can't do that. But is that really the power of a judge? Then you have a St. Louis judge that temporarily blocks a mask mandate in St. Louis. Does anybody not realize that this is not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people? This is now a government of judges, by judges, for judges? Is no one else concerned about this? These are just a few of the headlines. I've got, you know, there are dozens of them. And to me, it all goes back to that question from the Declaration of Independence, that first grievance. How are the judges any different than King George when they simply refuse their assent to laws, many of which are the most wholesome and necessary for the public good? How is that independence? How is that not being a subject? When you endow your power to a representative and they pass laws, and an unelected, frequently unelected judge simply, well, overturns it or blocks it, you end up with this confusing mishmash where the Supreme Court decides it's not going to block the Indiana University's mask mandate, while another judge blocks the mandate in Arkansas. Or a Minnesota judge that decides one position on a concealed carry case, while another court says, no, you can't. These are all symptoms of a breakdown in the governmental structure, a breakdown of our understanding of the Constitution, the three branches of government, and the role of those branches of government. See, interestingly enough, Alexander Hamilton wrote in Federalist Papers number 78, whoever attentively considers the different departments of power must perceive that in a government in which they are separated from each other, the judiciary, from the nature of its very functions, will always be the least dangerous to the political rights of the Constitution. because it will be least in capacity to annoy or injure them. But we've inverted that entire process. Far from being the least able to injure our rights, they are now the most capable of injuring our rights because we've turned them from an independent arbiter in cases to a ruler determining what laws will and will not be allowed. This is one of the fundamental problems that have become part of this country. And while so many in the political and punditry class have us looking at the president or looking at the Congress, and I understand those are important. I've already talked before about how it's important that we actually focus more on the state and local governments. But at all levels, we need to recognize that judges are not there to rule. Judges don't rule. They offer opinions. And when they do so badly, they need to be replaced. Yet when was the last time you heard of a judge being impeached? Oh, maybe sure in some state it's happened. I haven't heard of one, but never seems to have happened at the federal level. Because we worship judges. We treat them as if they can never be wrong, that somehow they are perfect arbiters of rights and justice. Yet we identify, at least at the federal level, we identify them based on the political party of the president who appointed them. They've turned into another political arm. But a political arm that effectively has no check because the American people keep hiring idiots who will not exercise their power to check the judiciary. See, checks and balances require that all three branches have checks against them. What is the check against a court? Another court? A superior court? Well, who's the check above the superior court? Oh, we get to the Supreme Court. Well, who's the check on the Supreme Court? So now we live not by laws, but by edicts from these oligarchs in black robes. These men and women who placed the opinion of their peers above the laws, both the supreme and the statutory laws of the land. And we keep letting it happen. And as long as we do, we are going to live in this limbo of which judge do you get? We're going to live like the Barnell Stutzman or some of the others who go from court case to court case to court case because, well, if you don't win, you simply sue them again. So we end up with, the judges deciding whether or not a COVID vaccine can be mandated. That's right. We don't care what the Constitution says. A judge gets to decide whether or not you have a right to control your own body. You have the right to be at liberty unless it's infringed upon by due process. What good does the Constitution matter if it's up to a judge? One judge blocks a mandate. Another judge lets one go through. One judge, one court invalidates a ballot initiative. Another one lets it go through. And it's not simply the judges. I remember President George W. Bush signing the Patriot Act saying, I think this is unconstitutional, but I'm going to sign it and let the courts figure it out. A blatant abdication of his responsibility to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. That includes the supreme law of the land. But worst of all, this idea has permeated society. It's permeated the citizens of this country from the standpoint of believing that just because a court says so, that means it's law. That a court can say something in direct contradiction of the Constitution of the United States and believe it actually has effect, it has meaning, it is valued. See, Alexander Hamilton went on in Federalist 78, says the executive not only dispenses the honors, but holds the sword of the community. The legislature not only commands the purse, but prescribes the rules by which the duties and rights of every citizen are to be regulated. We've given that up. He goes on, the judiciary on the contrary has no influence over either the sword or the purse, no direction either of the strength or of the wealth of the society, and can take no active resolution whatever. But that's not true anymore. Judges have assumed the power over the sword to tell the president when he can and cannot use the military, or to control the purse, what Congress can and cannot spend money on. They control the strength and the wealth of society by their opinions, not because they have the active power. They have no enforcement mechanism, but because we voluntarily subject ourselves to them. We submit to them. We hire men and women to represent us, and not only do we allow them to submit to courts, we expect them to submit to courts. So when Alexander Hamilton said, it may truly be said to have neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend upon the aid of the executive arm, even for the efficacy of its own judgments. Well, that was true in the government that we created, but it's not true today. And it's not true primarily because the American people don't follow it. It's one thing to say, is it anarchy to ignore a court? No. A court issues an opinion. According to the courts, black people were property. According to the courts, if you were of Japanese descent, you could be locked up in an internment camp, and that was perfectly legal. See, courts get it wrong all the time, which is why they're not imbued with any power, because they are the least connected to the people. But what really concerns me, see, I'm not surprised that people, that judges seek power. It doesn't surprise me one little bit. And I'm not surprised to see politicians and pundits, especially politicians, punt their responsibility to another branch of government. That's nothing new either. What concerns me is the American people, in our ignorance, have become dependent upon the courts to make up our minds. So when parents are concerned about their authority over their children in public school, what do? They file a lawsuit. They beg the government in the form of a court to reinforce their rights as parents. When New York City creates arbitrary and capricious laws, they create illegal mask mandates, they create bone-crushing regulation. What do restaurant owners do? They sue. They don't look at the government and say, we didn't authorize you to do that, so what you're doing is meaningless. It's empty. It's void. Therefore, we'll ignore it. No. They go begging to government for permission to exercise their rights, including the right to determine the just powers of any government. When a state stands and says, you know what, businesses, we aren't happy with vaccine mandates. Again, we have cruise lines. And where do they go? They go to a court. And according to the news, a judge ruled that Norwegian Cruise Lines can require that passengers getting on in Florida must be vaccinated. Excuse me, judges don't rule. But we've got this stuck in our head that judges rule, that what a judge orders must be followed. No. Judges are not kings and queens. We did not create petty tyrants, not legally. They exercise power by our consent. And we not only determine the breadth of their power, we also determine whether or not we'll follow it. Now, I'm not talking about simply ignoring courts simply because you want to ignore courts. I'm saying we're not going to be dependent on courts to determine how we live our lives. Courts are still part of government. You know, it's funny, I was asked during an interview, should we have independent courts? No. No, no, and again, no. Now, I know the common thing, well, you know, we want them independent. We don't want them politically bound. But that's a pipe dream. Courts should be dependent on the people they work for. They should be dependent on the representatives of the people. But the representatives of the people have once again failed to do their job because we keep hiring people who are no good at the job. We keep hiring people that refuse to hold courts accountable and judges accountable for their bad behavior. We do it at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. And because we never forced them, we never demanded that they hold these men and women in black roles accountable, we now live in an effective oligarchy. And when a court issues an opinion, suddenly that's holy writ. We go back to the original case we were talking about, the hyperbole over Texas SB 8. The idea that's been drilled into our heads that the courts have created a constitutional right that they cannot do, not legally. They have not created a constitutional right. That disagreeing with a court is not anarchy, and simply the fact that people have been arguing about this for 50 years, but the courts haven't decided differently, doesn't make it more law. It's still an opinion, and it's a bad one. It's not nearly as bad as most people think, but it's still a bad opinion. So now we are not governed by those in the legislatures. We're not governed by our executives. We're governed by judges. Even to the point of the Biden administration is suing Texas over the governor's order to not allow transportation of sick illegal aliens within the state. It's not a question of what the law says. It's not even a question of what the Constitution says. It all boils down to what does a judge say. And this is why I say it is so important that we read and study the Constitution. Not what people say about the Constitution, not what they don't teach in law schools, not what the nonsense that we're taught in public schools, but that we study the actual document. It's not that hard. See, I keep telling you, when my wife used to work in a bank, and when she was trained to recognize counterfeit money, the one thing they never let her touch was counterfeit money. They only let her handle real, legitimate U.S. currency. Do you know why? They want her so used to what is true, what is right, what is good, that when she encountered something that didn't match up, even if she wasn't exactly sure why, she would recognize something was wrong. The feel was wrong, the texture was wrong, the smell was wrong, the color was wrong. Something was wrong, and that was the red flag to get it checked out. But we don't do that when it comes to the supreme law of the land. We don't teach ourselves, we don't teach our children, what does the Constitution actually say? What did our founding fathers say about the actual Constitution? So that when we encounter some things that are not right, even if we're not exactly sure why, we immediately react with, no, something's wrong here. We take that action. We make that recognition. So when we see that everything now is not being run by the Constitution or the laws or the representatives of the people or the executive branch, no. Everything is ultimately in the hands of a judge. That includes the Texas SB 8 law. That includes actions of the governors of all of our states. That includes the legislatures of all of our states. How many state laws, before they've gone into effect, have been enjoined by some judge waiting for them to bless it. And people think that's the way it's supposed to be because we haven't been exposed to the truth. Now, if the bad news is we haven't been exposed to the truth, the good news is the cure is simple. Get exposed to the truth. Now, there's several ways you can do this. Obviously, I'd appreciate if you went to the website, constitutionstudy.com. You can find articles. You can find videos. You can ask questions. I've got twice a month, I put on a live Q&A. I live stream it on YouTube, on Periscope, and on the website, Constitution Study. If you want to follow along on that, check it out. Subscribe to me on YouTube, Constitution Study. You just search for Constitution Study. You'll find it with my face. And follow along. You can ask questions there. Put them in the comments. I answer those questions live on the program. You want to be more involved, go to constitutionstudy.com. On the right-hand column, you'll see the calendar, and you'll see Constitution Live Q&A. Register for one. You register for one, you'll get notified every time they're ready. I'll email you a Zoom link you can join, and we can actually have a conversation. See, it's really great to deal with questions because, one, if you've got questions, I want to try and give you answers. But very often, I want to give you answers that are based in original sources and original documents. So it's a great place to get those questions answered. You can head over, if you want to become a real student, a real scholar of the Constitution, head to constitutionscholars.com. There you can join and you can find others that are interested in studying and study together. It's absolutely free to register. You get access to a library, some videos, and groups of other students that want to read and study the Constitution. Maybe you can have me out. I will do a program for you. I did a tour earlier this year where I went through the Northern Plains. I'm trying to set one up to go through Florida, possibly Georgia. I've had one person ask me to go out to Houston, but I haven't had a lot of follow-up with them. But I'm willing to travel to teach people about the Constitution. If you want, we can even do it online. We'll do it through Zoom. It's not quite as good as doing it in person, but these are all ways that you can open your mind up to these different ideas, to ask questions, to read, to study, to get involved. And nothing I've mentioned so far costs a dime. I don't charge for the Constitution Study. I don't charge for the Constitution Scholars. They are free. And everything on the Constitution Study is free for you not only to use, but for you to share. Because I want you so used to the real thing that when these counterfeits show up, you recognize it. Even if you're not exactly sure why they're wrong, you know that something is wrong. Now, if you want to support the work that I do, and I do, you know, I do quite a bit. I don't charge for any of the events I go out to. I don't charge when I do these online events. So if you want to help, you can go to constitutionstudy.com/donations or just find the donation form on the right-hand side and support. Help me bring this education to adults and, more importantly, to children. A lot of people ask me, you know, when is a good time for my child to start studying the Constitution? Well, you can expose them pretty much as young as you want. But to really study it is generally somewhere around 13. Seems to be a good time when people, when most children are able to grasp the concepts and incorporate them into their understanding and still have questions and not simply be empty vessels, not simply being indoctrinated. So that's a good, you know, good thing. So maybe you can help put on some of these events. But all of this is done because I think it is so important that we know what our Constitution says. We know what our rights are. We understand how our government is designed to work so that we can work to restoring all of those to their proper place. So we return the Constitution to the supreme law of the land. We return the people as the rightful owners of all political power. that we only delegate certain powers to government. We return the judiciary to the weakest branch of government. And we return the elected branches, the legislature and the executive, to be servants of the people, not masters over us. And until we understand how our government is supposed to work, how it's designed to work, that its goal is to protect your freedom and your liberty, your rights, well, we'll continue to live at the whim and the will of oligarchs across this nation. And the sad part is, we then condemn our children to be just subjects of a ruling elite rather than citizens, free and just citizens of a republic that has a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. But I can't do it alone, and your children won't have it unless you do the work. So whether you go to America Out Loud and you search for the Constitution Study, or you head to the website Constitution Study or the Constitution, whatever you do, if you join my free websites or buy my books, whatever you do, please understand the Constitution. Read and study it. If not for your own rights, for your children. Now be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. See, it's important we all do our part, that we share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and the videos so we can help keep America secure and keep her free.
He'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.